the next time. And his care was made easier by the cooperation of the digging crew, who now appreciated the long-term consequences of their labor. As Broken Petal moved between the rows, he saw a white patch in the crust. As he passed over that section of the crust, it seemed strangely hot. He moved back and forth, feeling the crust with his underside. He was bewildered. This had never happened before. As he went between the plants to check in the next row, the crust trembled underneath him. The automatic sonar sensors that he used to track his prey sprang into action, and his bewilderment changed into shock. The source of the trembling was directly below him. He was scared. Is it a dragon? No, no, there is no such thing as a dragon, he reassured himself. The old hunters used to tell tales of a tall, fire-shooting monster that came up out of the crust and stopped a Chila in his tracks by searing his outer edges with its violet-colored fire. The dragon would then fall on him from its tremendous height, smashing him like an egg sack, and then absorbing him for dinner. No one had ever seen a dragon, but the large, very strong crystal bones that were found scattered in profusion over and underneath the crust certainly gave a tint of credibility to the tales, for no one knew where the dragon crystals came from. Broken Petal moved away from the area as the crust got hotter and hotter, and the trembling from underneath continued. He was halfway back to the clan stockades when some of his rear eyes saw a spurt of bluish-white gas shoot from a crack in the crust, searing a petal of the plant overhead. A group from the stockades met him as he approached. "It feels like a crust quake," one said, "but it keeps on repeating in the same place."
"It is not far," said Many Pods, one of the clan's best trackers.
"You are right, Many Pods," Broken Petal said. "Whatever it is right in the middle of our field." The clan flowed carefully to the edge of the field and took turns looking down the affected row as the hot smoke and gas continued to pour from the crack. More plants were burned now. Broken Petal had been thinking, and when the clan had finished looking and formed to the east and west of him, he knew what he had to do.
"The smoke and hot gas are going to kill our plants," he said.
"Pretty Egg, get back to the stockades and get everyone out here fast. Even the littlest hatchling can carry a few pods. The rest of you, start picking as fast as you can. Start by going as near the smoke as your treads can take, then pick everything off those plants. Even the unripe pods will taste good after the ripe ones are gone." Broken Petal led the way down the row, as his instructions radiated away through the crust. "Just when things were getting better," he thought. "The gods shall tread the edges of the proud," the old storytellers had always said. Well, he had let himself get complacent, and the old ones were right. He moved as close as he dared to the vent. The smoke was reaching high up into the atmosphere now, the heat radiating down on his dark red topside from the billowing bluish-white column was uncomfortable. Although the crust was hot, he could still get to within three plants of the vent. He paused for a moment, formed three manipulators, and started picking pods, ripping most of them away from the flesh of the plant, although some of them were near ripe and came away easily. He stored the pods in a carrying pouch he formed in the upper part of his body. He moved back and forth, picking pods as he went, approaching the crevasse at a distance that was mediated by the desire for food, overcoming the unwillingness of his tread to move to hotter crust. The first section of plants nearest the crevasse went quickly. Broken Petal organized things so that the pods were dropped by the pickers at the edge of the planting, to be taken back to the stockade by the younger ones and stored away by the old ones. Although they moved as fast as they could, they lost many pods from the plants that were too close to the crevasse. The tedious work continued, with the laborers constantly harassed by shocks and crust dust falling on their topsides. Soon, all were back from the field, their eating pouches sucking quietly on pods as they rested at the outskirts of the clan compound. Some of their eyes scanned the small blue dot hill that now grew in the middle of the devastated petal plant field, while other eyes followed the pillar of smoke that went far up into the sky until it seemed to touch the stars. The smoke went from an intensely glaring blue-white column at the base to deep, deep red clouds far up in the cool black sky, the bottoms of the billowing red clouds tinged with a yellow glow from the crust below. The times grew difficult. The food they had harvested lasted a long time, but the diet of immature pods was a great deal less tasty and nourishing than the steady turn after turn of feasting that they had enjoyed after they had learned about farming. Broken Petal tried to salvage things. There were no overripe seed pods from the recent crop, so he sent out a team to forage in the far regions for more, while he had the rest gouge holes in the crust away from the towering column of smoke. After much labor, the holes were ready, but the hunting party returned empty-handed. Broken Petal knew better than to berate them. In times like these, a successful hunting party had its pick of love partners, while these would only have each other for many, many turns. "What was the problem?" he asked. Sihai spoke for them.
"We saw many hunting parties that were doing what we were doing, outgathering every pod and hunting every animal they could find, even the almost worthless tiny shell."
He went on.
"We went as far as we could before our own food ran out. It was the same everywhere. Everyone was so busy hunting that there was no fighting. We thought about attacking one of the other groups, but it was obvious from their thinness that they were carrying very little in their pouches in the way of catch, and were as bad off as we were. We even attempted to talk with some of them using long talk. Although they don't speak just the way we do, it was obvious from what we could make out that all the clans are afraid of the Tower of Smoke and the constant trembling of the crust."
Flow Hunter, the clan's bravest hunter, who had been allowed to change her egg name after her third kill of a flow slow, interrupted with a laugh.
"Some of them think that the Tower of Smoke is from the fire of a dragon, and the trembling is the dragon moving over the crust to get them. All of them are talking about leaving, saying the place has become taboo."
Then Broken Petal had a flash of inspiration, born out of the natural instincts that had made him leader of the clan. "If every clan is out hunting and stripping the crust bare of food," he said, "we will go where they don't go." He spoke to the hunting party. "Go eat and load up with food. With the next turn, you are going out hunting again. Only this time, you are to go southward, in the hard direction." There was a shuffle of discontent from the group. They had been expecting to be sent out again in an attempt to redeem themselves. But to be sent in one of the hard directions sounded like punishment. No one ever went in the hard direction unless he had to. Not even the powerful Flow Slow. Sihai started to object, but Broken Petal tapped him to silence with a sharp ripple from his tread. His tread started again, softer this time, and the encouraging words rippled through the crust to vibrate against the treads of the hunting party. "I'm not angry with you, and I know that to travel in the hard direction means that you will move so slowly that you will still be within sight after three turns," he said. "Think. Every clan we know is east or west of us, and we all go back and forth over the same territory, stripping it bare.
If you go in the hard direction far enough, you may find land where there are fewer clans and more food. Now, eat and go. Long before the turn was complete, the hunting party was ready to leave. Broken Petal gave them last instructions. Go neither east nor west until you can see mature petal plants. Then you can go off to examine them to see if there are any seed pods. If not, continue south until you do. But don't go beyond your food supplies. I want you back. His tread rippled with wry humor. After all, there are two directions that are hard going. And if you don't find anything in one direction, you could always try the other one. With a rumble of bitter humor, the hunting party pushed off toward the south. After a half a turn, they were out of reach of Short Talk, but still were visible as figures halfway to the horizon. After three turns, they disappeared over the horizon, and the rest turned to their chores and waiting. Sihai pushed slowly into the springy air. The most difficult part about traveling in the hard direction was that his body kept trying to slip to one side or the other. If he didn't hurry, but kept sliding a thin edge into the hard direction, then expanding it to make a crack that he could flow into, the going was steady. It was like going into a wind, but different. The wind kept pushing on him even when he was still, but the only force he felt from moving in the hard direction was the force he himself made when he attempted to move in that direction. If he stood still, for a while he could still feel the pressure, but then it slowly penetrated his body until he finally felt nothing, until he tried to move again. Sihai looked around and saw the rest of the party slowly struggling their way along. Ahead of him was Flow Hunter, one of his favorite fun partners. Although he was leader of the hunting party and shouldn't be doing such things while they were on a hunt, the slow grind of pushing into the slippery air had made him bored. He pushed even harder, and in a little while was right behind Flow Hunter. He tickled her trailing edge.
"What are you planning at break period?"
he whispered, the electronic waves of his whisper tingling her multi-hued skin.
"Stop that," Flow Hunter protested. "It is hard enough pushing through this slippery stuff without being tickled from behind. Get back, or I won't be doing anything with you for many turns, much less during break period."
Sihai persisted. He flowed forward, both above and below the trailing edge of Flow Hunter, giving her friendly squeezes as she tried to ripple him off. She pushed forward harder to get away from him. Although normally she could outdistance him, Sihai found that he kept right up to Flow Hunter with almost no effort. Suddenly, he stopped playing around and tapped her to a stop.
"I had no trouble at all keeping up with you," he said in amazement. "There you were, pushing away in the hard direction, and I felt as if I were going east or west. Why?"
After a little bit of experimentation, and many giggles and slaps, they found that once a gap was opened by a pathbreaker, the gap would remain open as long as she kept moving. Then, if someone else stayed right on her trailing edge, very little extra effort was needed for him to move forward. As Sihai had found, it was like moving in the easy direction. Except for the pathbreaker, of course. Before long, the hunting party was rearranged in a line. The head of the line worked at top effort as long as possible, then dropped to the side to let a fresh pathbreaker move ahead, while the tired one dropped into the end of the line and strolled along, cuddled up to the friendly trailing edge of someone of the opposite sex. The hunting party pushed forward at rapidly increased speed. With no brakes needed except when the two mismatched males got tired of being in on only half the fun and insisted upon being between two females. They soon reached lands where there were fewer and fewer hunting parties and, after many turns, came to a region where mature petal plants could be found with pods still on them. It was not long before they had not only plenty of ripe pods for food, but also more than enough seed pods, bursting with hard little seeds. They stuffed pods and seeds into carrying pouches, until the pouch orifices in their skins bulged out painfully. The way back was rougher, for their bulky thickness caused by the load of pods and seeds made it necessary to open a wider gap in the hard direction before they could move through it. Their thickness also made them obvious targets for attack. Their new technique for moving in the hard direction saved them from being overcome by a large war party from a neighboring clan. But it cost them Sihai, who was at the end of the column when the war party rushed at them from ambush out of the east as they went by. They were going to turn and attack, but Sihai ordered them to continue, while he kept the attackers at bay long enough for them to escape. Broken Petal eventually saw a thicker but shorter column of hunters show up over the horizon. At first he was bewildered by the shape and speed of the moving cluster of Chela. From a distance they looked like a strange new type of flow slow, except that a flow slow was too lazy to move in the hard direction. He started to call an alarm, but it soon was obvious that the unusual motion of the head of the monster was the peculiar heave of Flow Hunter as she pushed her way along. Soon, the whole clan gathered at the edge of the settlement and watched as the happy, giggling hunting party returned and dumped their booty. The seeds were distributed and quickly planted in the waiting holes by a large crew, all munching on ripe pods. Flow Hunter spent the next turn giving a detailed account of the trip to Broken Petal. The report of the loss of Sihai caused a moment of sadness in them both, but they turned their minds back to the present and continued on. The nearby volcano dominated their lives. Fortunately, it became dormant for a while, with just a thin wisp of yellow-white smoke spiraling up into the air. But the rumbling in the crust grew worse every turn. The crop grew well, but when the volcano became more active again, Broken Petal decided that they had better move further away. The crop was harvested, and the clan took the food and their few belongings, especially the precious broken shards of ultra-hard dragon crystal, and moved off toward the south. There were many in the clan, and they were not in a hurry, so a modification of the hunting party pathbreaker technique was used. The stronger young ones formed a broad front and pushed ahead in the hard direction. They kept up a steady pace, and the rest of the clan, packed close together, followed along behind. Time, 14:44 and 14 seconds, GMT. Sunday, 22 May, 2050. The interstellar arc St. George settled into its orbit around the spinning neutron star at a radius of 100,000 kilometers and with a period of 13 minutes. The science crew began their scientific surveys. Although they would get much better data when they could go down in Dragon Slayer to look at the neutron star from only 400 kilometers away, they still could do a preliminary survey with the long-range telescopes. Gene Kelly Thomas was belted into the seat in front of the imaging science console on St. George. The belt was adjusted to accommodate the fact that she was sitting on her crossed legs. With her cap of short red hair and her upturned nose, she looked like a pixie seated on a toadstool, with seatbelt.
Her bright blue eyes flicked over the features of the latest scan of the Hydrogen Alpha Ultraviolet Imager. The computer had noticed something unusual in the last scan and had alerted her. A blinking square drew her attention to a small oval bullseye pattern that had appeared on the image of the star. In the upper corner of the screen, the computer had printed, "Lyman Alpha Scan, taken 144.05, 22 May 2050. New feature at 54 West Longitude, 31 North Latitude." Jean leaned forward.
"Identification?"
The image remained, but the words were replaced with, "Tentative identification, active volcano. Center temperature, 15,000 degrees. Jean spoke again.
"Switch Lyman Alpha scanner to high-resolution scan of target region."
She watched as the image was replaced on the screen with a close-up of the volcano. The image blinked 5 times a second as the imager took a scan at each rotation of the star. As she watched, she could see a flare-up in the central region, followed by a streak of brightness that flowed away from the center, the lava flow getting dimmer and dimmer as it moved. A detailed history of the birth and death of a volcano was certainly worth keeping a careful watch on. Perhaps, if they were lucky, the amount of matter that built up in the shield would become so great that it would initiate a star quake during their visit. That should set the whole star to vibrating, and they might be able to determine the internal resonant modes of the star and get a better computer model for the thickness and density of the inner layers. The new volcano was certainly a high-priority item, but it would have to take its turn. She couldn't tie up the scanner to take pictures of only one thing. She leaned forward again and spoke.
"Assign priority 1 to this target. Inform if any major change, or if activity stops."
She leaned back and pushed the print button.
"A volcano," she thought. "Pierre will surely be interested in this one. He wants to study the internal dynamics of the star, and now he has some insides to look at. However, the hot gas and dust that monster is emitting are sure going to complicate my atmospheric studies."
Time, 14:44 and 15 seconds, GMT. Sunday, 22 May, 2050. The clan moved very slowly southward. Travel in the hard direction against the magnetic field lines was not easy, even for the young hunters, and was still more difficult for the old and the hatchlings, although they were flowing into the gaps created by the moving van of pathbreakers. The hardest thing for them all to learn was to keep close together and keep moving. If a gap developed, or if anyone paused for a moment, the east-west magnetic field lines would reassert their position, pinning their bodies on the lines like beads on a wire. Unless they had the strength to begin moving south again, their only choice was to move east or west and join the tail of a portion of the group that was still moving. The clan got better at it, and by trial and error soon developed a flying wedge technique, with one strong hunter out front taking the full brunt of the fields and the rest of the stronger ones in a chevron behind, opening up the gap that was created. The other adults soon learned to form secondary chevrons behind, with the hatchlings and old ones in between. Then, if a gap developed, it was soon closed by the adults in the following chevron, and the trailing edge of the moving clan now no longer looked like a wounded flow-slow, leaving a trail of vital fluid behind. They had progressed a good distance when Broken Petal called a halt. He knew that they were probably still on some clan's territory, but he decided that, because so few hunting parties were on the horizon, they were probably in a region between two other clans. Normally, this would have been a poor place to stop. If they had to depend on foraging to the east and west, there would have been less and less food to find the further away the hunters went.
but with the ripe seeds and the knowledge of how to take the sky away from them to make them grow, the clan could stay in one place, always at full strength, with all of its warriors home tending the growing plants, and going out only for game to vary their diet and to show off their prowess. The clan settled in with relief, and a crew was sent off to a nearby cliff to get building stones for the stockades, pod bins, and the all-important egg pens. As Speckled Egg approached the cliff with a quarry crew, the youngster grew frightened. Never before had he been so close to anything so tall. It seemed that it was going to fall directly down on him. But he certainly was not going to let his fright show on his first time with a hunting party.
"It sure is tall," he remarked calmly. "Sure is," said Flow Hunter.
Her tread rumbled teasingly.
"Looks as if it is going to fall right on top of you, doesn't it?"
"Yes, but it has not fallen before, so I guess it won't now,"
Speckled Egg said confidently.
"But it will when we get through with it," said Flow Hunter.
Then, turning serious, she said,
"Which end looks closer?"
The top of the cliff sloped downward toward the east. The party took off in that direction, carrying their broken shards of dragon crystal and one unbroken, round-tipped whole dragon crystal that they had found when digging holes for the seeds. They soon came to the end of the vertical fault plain and began the long, slow, arduous climb up the slope.
"It's like traveling in the hard direction, but worse," complained Speckled Egg. "When you stop moving in the hard direction, you can rest. But when you were climbing up, you might as well not stop to rest. When you do, you still have to hold on to keep from flowing back down."
Flow Hunter showed him her trick of waiting until she came across a small stone before stopping to rest, then stretching her body out upwards from the stone. With the stone preventing her from flowing downward, and the hard directions holding her in from the side, she could almost relax and enjoy her food pot in comfort. It was a tricky technique, and Speckled Egg found his edges flowing around the stone more than once. But soon, he was as accomplished a climber as any of them. Although they had gone east for only one turn before reaching the end of the fault, it took them many turns and much food to struggle up the sloping hill in the intense gravity and make it back to the top of the cliff. Flow Hunter formed a strong crystallium core in one of her eye stubs, held the eye up as high as she could, then moved slowly toward the edge.
"I can see the clan camp off in the distance. This is the right place," she said.
She stood still and looked for a long time.
"What is the matter?"
asked Speckled Egg.
"Just looking," she said. "Everything looks very funny when you can look down on it. Come and see."
The last thing Speckled Egg wanted to do was go near the edge, but he did. One of his eyes held high in imitation of Flow Hunter. Together, they moved forward until they could see the members of the hunting party they had left at the bottom of the cliff.
"They are so big around," exclaimed Speckled Egg. "And so funny looking. You can see all the lumps on their topsides."
"You would look just as big and lumpy yourself if you could see yourself from the top instead of only from the side," said Flow Hunter. "You are right about the lumps, though. They are funny looking. I bet that big reddish-yellow lump in the middle of Double Seed is an egg that is about ready to be dropped."
She pushed her way back from the edge.
"Come on. We have a lot of hard work to do."
The climbers started to work. The first thing they did was to push the large, whole dragon crystal to the edge and let it fall off. The nearly unbreakable, super-hard crystal became invisible and reappeared at the bottom, splintered into a dozen sharp shards.
The waiting group at the bottom rode out the shock, and then moved quickly forward to retrieve the now valuable hunting knives and digging tools. When the dragon crystal shards had been removed, the climbers at the top moved forward to the edge and used their digging tools to gouge a long line on the top of the cliff. The gouge line was back from the edge a distance equal to the height of the stones that they could easily carry. They spread apart the fibers in the crust until there was a long, deep crack, held in place by the connections at either end of the long strip. They then went to the west end of the strip, where the nap of the crust would give them a better grip, and formed a chain with their bodies. Flo Hunter stretched out as far as she could with the sharpest crystal shard held in front of her in a long manipulator. She concentrated for a moment, and soon several short manipulators were arrayed at her back edge. Speckled egg and dusty crust flowed above and below her, and also formed manipulators to grasp hers. The rest grasped them and spread themselves out as flat as possible to form an anchor.
"Everyone ready?" asked Flo Hunter.
She then started sawing away at the end of the slit, only this time cutting across the fibers in the crust. It was slow, hard work, for the fibers were the source of the real strength of the crustal material. They switched places. To Speckled Egg's horror, it was his turn to be sawing away, when the weight of the long section of the crust overcame the strength of the remaining fibers, and the face of the cliff came away in a long, curling rip that extended the slit on the top surface down to the base. The top surface of the cliff, relieved of some of its stress, rebounded with a shock wave. For the first, and he hoped only, time in his life, Speckled Egg's tread was not solidly in contact with the crust. He had no time to be afraid before the crust came up to meet him with a bruising smash. They all lay quietly for a moment, and then pounded each other with triumph as they backed away from the crumbling edge. They hurried back down the way they had come, pausing only now and then for a little food. They all felt like having a little fun, too, but that had to wait, except for friendly pats and treadings, until they got to the end of the cliff where the crust was flat. By the time they had returned to the bottom of the cliff with the jumble of stones at its base, Speckled Egg was a full-fledged hunter, having not only been a hero by being at the point when the danger was greatest, but having been given a hero's reward and his initiation into manhood by Flo Hunter herself. Having felt the successful conclusion of the quarrying expedition come rumbling in through the crust, Broken Petal had sent out an additional work crew to help drag the stones back to camp. Soon, the place began to look like home again. A pod bin was the first task, so that everyone could drop his load of pods without having to worry that the constant winds would roll them away. The old ones were most grateful for the pod bin, for they had been tied down holding on to most of the food store while the younger ones had been working. Now they could move around and get to the more important and pleasurable task of turning eggs and raising hatchlings. Next came the egg pen, and again another great load was taken off the clan, as all the females could drop the eggs they had been hauling around since they had left the old home and started on their exodus. For many, many turns, the clan grew and prospered in their new home. Time, 15:48 and 10 seconds, GMT. Sunday, 22 May, 2050. Pierre Carnot-Niven, his long, straight hair and a halo about his head, worked away at the console keyboard, overlaying one multicolored computer display on another. His soft brown eyes peered at a complicated pattern of lava flows that would have hopelessly confused anyone but him. Pierre set the computer to calculating the load on the crust from the new lava flows. It was a complicated problem. While the computer was working, he floated out from in front of his console and went over to see what Jean was doing. Jean was checking the plots, showing the drift of the smoke from the volcano through the atmosphere, and correlating it with the magnetic field measurements and the Coriolis forces caused by the high spin speed of the rotating star. She was developing a computer model for the magnetic field structure, so she could produce a detailed theory for the iron vapor atmosphere and how it interacted with the conflicting forces of gravity, magnetism, and spin of the star. Pierre floated nearer and watched over Jean's shoulder as she had the computer rotate the image of the star slowly on the screen. The hot smoke patterns were in white, the magnetic field lines in blue, and the Coriolis and gravity forces in green.
"It looks like the weather patterns on the Earth," Pierre commented, his fingertips resting on her shoulder to help him keep station.
"Yes," Jean said. "The smoke travels mostly east-west from the volcano because it is easier for it to travel along the magnetic field lines than across them. But when the smoke reaches the magnetic poles, the easy direction is into the ground, so the smoke piles up into a big crescent with the volcano in the middle. There is some leakage at the poles, though."
"Why is the leakage staying in a belt north of the equator?" asked Pierre. "I can understand that the smoke leakage from the east pole would stay on the north spin hemisphere since it is above the spin equator. But why doesn't the smoke leaking from the west pole contaminate the atmosphere in the southern hemisphere?"
Jean spoke toward the console.
"West pole view."
They watched as the image rotated to the view over the west pole and stopped. Jean pointed to the screen.
"It happens that one of the stronger subpoles of the chaotic west polar region happens to lie along the same magnetic longitude as the volcano, and it also happens to be above the spin equator. That subpole has blocked off that longitude, keeping all the smoke trapped in the northern hemisphere. The leakage from the west pole, combined with the leakage from the east pole, forms the intense smoke belt just north of the spin equator."
Time, 16:45 and 24 seconds, GMT. Sunday, 22 May, 2050. Smoky Sky looked up and worried. The sky was now nearly always full of smoke. When it was time to name him shortly after he had left the egg, the old ones in charge of the hatching pens had thought a smoky sky so unusual that they had given him that name. Now, many, many turns later, here he was, leader of the clan, and haunted by his own name. The crops from the petal plants had been getting worse and worse. The nearly constant cloud cover overhead seemed to suffocate the plants. It was time to move. But could they go far enough to escape the ever-present smoke?
"I had better move slowly," Smoky Sky said to himself. "No use running from a flow slow, right into the maw of a swift."
He moved to the clear place between the stockades and the field of plants, and to trummed a call for the clan to gather. Soon, all but the guards and the hatchlings were arranged in arcs to the east and west of him. Smoky Sky spoke.
"The times are not good. We will have to move where the sky is not so smoky and the petal plants can grow. It will be a long journey, so we must have much food to carry. Blue Flo, you are to take a hunting party and look for a better place for us. I think it will be far from here, so take as many pods as you can carry, for you will not be back for many turns. Remember the words of our ancient aged ones. Go in a direction others do not go."
Blue Flo moved off to one side, followed by a crowd of younger warriors eager for adventure. He picked a small group and led them off to the pod bin to load up on food. Smoky Sky watched, musing.
"He will be a good leader. He has picked the ones with stamina, even if they are not the best hunters. More importantly,
since it will be a long journey. He has an equal number of both sexes.
Smoky Sky turned to the crowd and said, I don't know how many turns it will be before the hunting party comes back. But when they do, I want the pod bin filled to the walls. The petal plants are not growing many pods, so we will just have to plant more of them.
Amid a shuffle of groans, Smoky Sky pushed his way to the tool bin, picked up a sharp shard of dragon crystal, and set off to the field to start poking holes in the hard crust, knowing that the best way to get people working on a long, hard task was for the leader to start in first. Blue Flo looked over his group. They were all well bulked out, with pods tucked away in their storage pouches.
Let's go, he said, and started to push his way southward in the hard direction.
The others snuggled up to him in single file. After a turn of hard travel, they finally passed over the horizon and were on their own. For many, many turns, the hunting party moved along, the sky overhead still smoky. Finally, Shaking Crust remarked during a pod break,
I think that the smoke is even worse here than back at home.
They could not all agree then, but after a few more turns of travel, it was very obvious to all of them that conditions were worse here. The smoke filled the sky, and the crust was covered with sickly red-yellow ash that chilled their treads as they flowed over it. There was some talk of going back, but Blue Flo would have none of that. This was his first trial as a leader of a hunting party, and he would not come back with pods still pouched in his body. Blue Flo drove them on, always moving in the hard direction. The difficult grind of pushing ahead, with the poor grip that the ashes gave to their treads, took all the fun out of the expedition. But something else was happening that added to their discomfort. They were becoming lost. It was not for many turns that one of them mentioned what they had all been feeling.
This land bothers me, said Final Pod. I feel that I am lost all the time. Yet I know right where I am. I can see the cliff over there that we passed a few turns ago. So logically I know that I could make my way right back to the clan with no problem, just by going in the hard direction in the opposite way we have been going. But I still feel lost.
They all agreed. Logically, they knew they were not lost, but they definitely felt as if they were.
Let us move on, Blue Flo said, pushing off again.
But the further they went, the worse they felt, and the darker the sky became. Then the pods began to run low. At the next break, Shaking Crust spoke up for all of them.
I think we should turn back, Blue Flo. The land and the sky just get worse and worse the further we go. Perhaps the instructions of the ancient aged ones are no longer correct.
Blue Flo countered.
If we tell the clan to go back in the direction that we came from, they will just get closer to the volcano. If we have them go east or west, we know they will run into the other clans that are fleeing the volcano. If they stay where they are, the smoke will kill the petal plants, and we will all starve. Our only hope is in this direction. We must keep going as long as we can.
Shaking Crust said,
You may go on if you like. I'm going back.
Blue Flo had been expecting something like this for a long time and was ready for it. But he had never expected rebellion from his favorite playmate. Without warning, he was on top of her, drubbing her brain not soundly with his tread and knocking her out before she had a chance to move. Still on top of the unconscious body, he whispered, Does anyone else want to challenge me? No one moved as he flowed off Shaking Crust, who is starting to recover from her sonically induced shock. As her senses cleared, she heard Blue Flo talking.
I don't think you realize how serious things are. The volcano is poisoning all the crust that it can reach. The only hope for the clan is for us to find a place where we can survive. If we do not, the clan will die. The hatchlings first.
This last was a telling blow. For although the Chela were not attached to a specific hatchling, and no female could even remember which egg she had put into the hatchery unless it had some distinctive marking, they were all very attached to the little hatchlings, who lived a spoiled life until they were old enough to go to work. The thought of hatchlings dying was enough to eliminate any thought of quitting. Many turns later, Blue Flo was really worried. They were way past their food supply limit. It would be a weak and thin party of Chela that came back to the clan, if they made it back. The feeling of being lost had become worse. At the next break, he was almost ready to quit. But first, he decided to have a better look ahead. He took the longest dragon crystal spear that they had and poked its sharp end down into the crust. It stood far up into the sky, many times higher than he could ever lift an eye on one of his own flimsy eye stubs. When the others saw what he was doing, they gathered in a circle around him and applied pressure on his edges. He formed a thick pseudopod with one of his eye stubs at the end and floated up along the shaft of the dragon crystal spear until his eye was perched on top of the spear. The sky looked smoky right to the horizon.
"I see a star!"
he shouted, and his pseudopod flowed back down so quickly that they were all rippled by the energy regained from its fall.
"The sky is still smoky, but it must be thinner, because I can see a star through it. The star was right on the horizon!"
Shaking Crust insisted on seeing it, too. After much effort, she soon had one eye perched on top of the spear. The star was almost exactly in the hard direction, and right on the horizon. Shaking Crust was almost positive that it was brighter than any star she had ever seen, but without any other stars visible to compare it with, she was not sure. Great Crack and some of the others wanted to look too, but Blue Flo stopped the sightseeing. "It takes as much energy to put an eye on top of the spear as it does to travel a few turns where we can all see it from eye level. Let's get moving." With something to aim for, Spirit returned to the column. For the first time in many turns, they made good time over the ashen land. Soon, the star appeared above the horizon. And as it did, the feeling of being lost began to decrease. By silent agreement, the rest breaks were short, and they pushed on. Soon, Blue Flo noticed that there were short breaks in the intense cover of smoke. After a few more turns of travel, the ashes on the crust stopped being a hindrance to travel. Soon, other stars were visible, strange ones that they had never seen before. But the strangest one of all was the intensely bright reddish-yellow one that hung motionless in the southern sky from turn to turn, while all the others whirled about it like a cloud of minor deities paying homage to a god. It was an awe-inspiring experience for them all as they moved forward out of the smoky hell in back of them into a new land, free from smoke and ash, and with untouched petal plants growing in delicious profusion all about them. There were plenty of game signs, and soon they were all enjoying the meat of a slink, interspersed with delicious, perfectly ripe pods.
"There are plenty of game signs, but no sign of a single other Chela," said Shaking Crust. "The game was not particularly afraid of us. It is as if they had never been hunted before."
"This place sounds like an old one's stories of heaven," Great Crack said.
"I guess we should call it heaven," Blue Flo agreed.
"Bright's heaven. For Bright, the God Star, rules over it all. And its bright glare keeps the smoke from coming over the horizon. Let us load up with food and head back over the Lost Region to tell the clan the good news. We have been gone so long, they probably think we are dead."
Time, 16:45 and 34 seconds, GMT. Sunday, 22 May, 2050. Pierre turned from the display on his console and called over to Jean, who was operating the Lyman Alpha telescope at another console.
"I was trying to think if the weather would be any different on Earth if the magnetic field of the Earth were east-west instead of nearly north-south."
"No," Jean said. "The Earth's magnetic field is too weak to affect the atmosphere on Earth as it does here."
Pierre laughed, and Jean looked at him quizzically.
"I just realized that the only real effect of an east-west magnetic field on Earth would be on homing pigeons. Homing pigeons use a combination of the Earth's north-south magnetic field and the east-west Coriolis spin forces for homing. They would feel completely lost if the magnetic field lines and the Coriolis force lines were in the same direction, as they are along the spin equator here. That would be even worse than the fact that the directional sense of a homing pigeon gets turned around when the pigeon is released in the southern hemisphere after being trained in the northern hemisphere." Pierre turned back and spoke at the console.
"Store that sequence. Continue monitoring volcanic lava flow pattern on priority 2 basis." He turned to Jean.
"Well, the main console is all yours. I'm going to get some food, write a little, then head for bed. See you next shift."
Jean pulled herself into the main console seat, quickly checked all the settings, and carefully buckled herself in.
"What are you writing now?"
Pierre stopped himself at the hole in the deck and replied, "It's a physics test for the 10 to 14 age bracket. According to the communication flashes from the publisher, I made such a hit writing scan books about science and space for the 8 to 12 age group on the way out to Dragon's Egg that I actually have fan clubs. Do you realize that when I get back from this trip 2 years from now, I am going to be getting more in royalties from children's books than I will in salary for being a space scientist?"
"Well, none of us are jealous."
"Much," Jean said.
"We all realize that every kid you make enthusiastic about space science is going to be a voting taxpayer after we return, and we should come back to Dragon's Egg with a follow-up expedition before it leaves the solar system."
"I'm sure the World Space Administration agrees with you. They even gave my publisher a special rate on the cost of transmitting my manuscripts back."
He turned and pushed himself down the passageway. Time, 16:45 and 35 seconds GMT. Sunday, 22 May, 2050. Great Crack was a pack rat. Although one of the better hunters in the clan, with 2 flow-slow kills to her credit, she was the constant butt of jokes from her hunting mates because of her habit of picking up and carrying anything she found that looked interesting. And because of her highly developed sense of curiosity, practically everything looked interesting to her. When it came time for the hunting party to load up with ripe pods for the long journey back to the clan, Great Crack had to unpouch her trinkets so she could load up her pouches with pods. She went over to a shallow depression in the crust, amid ribald calls of, "What are you doing? Laying 3 eggs at once?" Followed by, "No, just 1, but it's the size of a flow slow." She dumped her precious pile of odds and ends, with the heavier ones around the pile in a low wall, that she hoped would protect them from the constant winds. With luck, she would be able to pick them up again when they returned with the clan.
With her bulk reduced to fighting trim, Great Crack flowed off the pile. Paying no attention to the jokes, she went off with the others as they moved through the petal plants, carefully picking off the best of the pods and storing them inside their body pouches until the whole hunting party was loaded to capacity.
"Are you sure that bulk is all pods, Great Crack?"
chided Shaking Crust.
"You didn't go back for a few trinkets, did you?"
Great Crack was in the midst of rippling out a vicious whisper about being a better fighter when loaded with pods than Shaking Crust was in fighting trim, and would she like to have her prove it, when Blue Flow interrupted with a loud t-trum on the crust.
"You two stop that," he said.
Then his eyes looked around to all of them, and he called,
"It's time to go back."
Blue Flow pushed his bulk in the hard direction, while the rest of them rapidly formed a single file and pushed off behind him. Suddenly, Blue Flow stopped.
"Wait," he said in amazement. "We're going in the wrong direction."
They all looked up from their crouched, streamlined positions in back of him and looked ahead. There was the benevolent beam of Bright directly ahead. They stopped, confused. They had come into Bright's heaven far enough that they had stopped having the lost feeling that they had experienced earlier under the smoke. Being good hunters, they knew instinctively where they were and in which direction to go. But their instincts were leading them directly toward Bright, while they knew from logic that the way back to the clan was in the opposite direction.
"I guess we will have to forget our where sense when it comes to traveling in this land," Blue Flow said.
He flowed to the back of the column and pushed off again, this time directly away from Bright. The group soon reached the edge of Bright's heaven. They all cast longing looks behind with a few of their eyes as Bright dipped below the horizon, and their sense of being lost returned. Blue Flow kept the break period short, since they were all in good shape and well-fed, and they made it quickly back across the feeling lost territory with its intense smoky sky flowing to the west. Their sense of direction slowly returned, and Blue Flow felt much better now that his instincts finally agreed with his logic. They were following their previous track very closely, and Blue Flow was disturbed that he could read their spoor. They must have been extremely discouraged to have been so careless. Well, they were on their way back now, and that spoor of many turns ago would just lead any trackers astray if they kept their present track clean. When it came his turn at the rear of the column, he looked back and was pleased with the fact that, except for a quickly fading whitish track from the heat of their bodies warming the crust, he could see almost no evidence of their passage. At the next break, most of them had another pod to eat. As was her usual custom, Great Crack kept all the seeds from the pod in case the clan needed more. Blue Flow noticed that she had only added a pod skin to the burial pit and came over to talk to her. "You are a good hunter and a hard fighter, Great Crack, so I have never complained about your bulk. But we are now on a very serious mission, and everything that slows us down hurts the chances for the survival of the whole clan. I want you to put all the seeds and anything